Trendstorm.
Welcome to Radio Sputnik and Trendstorm. My name is Andrew Kripko, and I'm going to give you a forward-focused analysis of things to come and the general trends behind them. Here's what we have for you today. Budapest Summit. The Silk Road comes to Europe. The latest meeting of the 16+1 group of China and the Central and Eastern European countries shows that the Silk Road intends to come to Europe via the Balkans. Islamic Military Alliance, Mideast NATO, or Paper Tiger? The first meeting of the Saudi-led military alliance kicked off to much fanfare as plaudits compared it to a Mideast NATO, while critics mocked it as nothing more than a paper tiger. And also, Lugansk leadership change. Connecting Novorossiya? The swift leadership change in the self-declared Lugansk People's Republic has raised hopes among some that it could unite with its sister statelet of Donetsk in finally setting the basis for Novorossiya. Opening up this edition of Trendstorm is the Silk Road's expansion to Europe. The latest meeting of the 16+1 group of China and the Central and Eastern European countries shows that the Silk Road intends to come to Europe via the Balkans. This format was originally launched in 2012 and brings together what former U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld once infamously referred to as New Europe, meaning the post-communist states, and China, predating the official announcement of Beijing's One Belt, One Road global vision of new Silk Road connectivity by 1 year. In the meantime, China has comprehensively expanded its relations with the 16 states of the region, offering loans and construction support for a variety of infrastructure projects that are expected to facilitate the Silk Road's expansion into Europe. Although paling in numerical comparison to the aid provided by the EU to the region, most of which is already part of the bloc, China's support comes with no political strings attached, and there are concerns in Brussels that Beijing's backing of the relatively impoverished states of New Europe might embolden them to take a tougher negotiating stand towards the bloc. While this would undoubtedly enhance their national sovereignty vis-a-vis what many have characterized as an increasingly authoritarian and hyper-liberal decision-making center, it's precisely for this reason why the EU feels threatened. Moreover, it's noteworthy to point out that two of China's top partners in the 16+1 are Poland and Serbia, with the former being run by a Euro-realist party presently unafraid to challenge Brussels, while the latter is an EU aspirant and a crucial transit state for China's vision. This is relevant to keep in mind because the backbone of China's European Silk Road is a high-speed railway that it plans to build between the Hungarian and Serbian capitals, with the potential of expanding it all the way south to the Greek port of Piraeus that's run by the China Ocean Shipping Company, Casco, and possibly even northward to Poland and the Baltics one day too. Serbia is therefore indispensable to China, while the Central and Eastern European powerhouse of Poland holds crucial importance because of its dual north-south and even east-west connectivity potential, though with the latter vector only being fully optimized if relations ever normalize with Russia. Interestingly, while the U.S. was fear-mongering about speculative Russian influence in the region, it might turn out to be Chinese influence that's ultimately the most powerful multipolar force in Central and Eastern Europe nowadays. So folks, this is definitely a rather curious and very intriguing topic this week, so I'm pleased to announce that we're joined by Mr. Stefan Gajic to speak with us about this today. Stefan is a PhD in political science who works at the Institute of European Studies in Belgrade.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Stefan, how transformative of an impact could the construction of a Budapest to Piraeus high-speed railway via Belgrade and Skopje be for the region's geopolitical and economic situation? And what grand strategic vision does China hope to advance by pioneering this corridor?
The construction of high-speed railway would be a significant game-changer in the region from various aspects. First of all, it would attract investment and it would accelerate economies of all the states. And having in mind that we're talking about depressed Balkan, in many cases post-war economies, post-transition as well, this would really be a boost. But also, The highway coincides with the potential lines of the Russian-Turkish gas pipeline, the Turkish Stream, that is supposed to also travel through territories of Macedonia, perhaps Bulgaria. It is still in negotiations, and certainly Serbia, and of course north towards Hungary. So this would significantly make the region more attractive, and I think that we already see the consequences. Yesterday, there was a meeting of the Atlantic Council. Serbia's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Ivica Dačić, was present. And there are two significant moments that I would like to stress. First of all, it seems that the worst enemies of not only Serbia, but Serbian people for the last 30 years, the hardcore Atlanticists, are now willing to talk about the historical peace with the Serbian people. Of course, that will be under their terms because right in the next sentence, they're talking about the permanent American military presence, which is needed. But on the other side, Dačić's behavior, so behavior of the Serbian minister, was, some would say, even arrogant. He said that the way that the travelers are treated on the United Airlines and in general in the United States is disrespectful. And he said that the American diplomat should not be surprised if the same thing happens to them when they travel to the region. And not only that, migrants, because they also went through similar treatment because they were on the same line. He said, well, if you're afraid to say what you think, don't worry, I will, and you can transfer them to Belgrade, so we'll do the drill. I mean, this is significant. On another question, he was asked about corruption in the Balkans, and he replied, speaking of lobbying, well, you've invented and legalized corruption, so don't ask me about these things. This was something absolutely unimaginable only weeks ago, and I think that a lot about the current position of the Balkans, Central Europe, but especially of Serbia as the main part of the chain in the new Silk Road, especially when we're talking about the European part of it. So that means that the Chinese have attracted competition. Yesterday, Mr. Miller from Gazprom, director of Gazprom, was in Belgrade. And it also might say something about the attractiveness of this region after the Chinese actually pulled the leg.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. And you touch upon some pretty important aspects there, Stefan. Well, since you were already talking about some of the challenges that China might be facing in the Balkans, particularly in terms of the U.S. putting pressure on Serbia and various corruption and so on and so forth, I want to ask you overall, Stefan, about what are the implications of China and the U.S. battling, if you will, or competing for Central and Eastern Europe? I mean, as opposed to Russia getting involved. And we know Russia is involved to different extents, but now it's kind of looking like, you know, China's becoming the major player in this region, that the U.S. doesn't just have to confront Russia, but also its Chinese partners. So what do you make out of this? What are the implications?
China is, as I said, a game changer, and it is, for many, an unexpected one. The United States is not sitting still, and it is most obvious in Macedonia. Macedonia is the weakest state on the route of the new Silk Road, on the Balkan part of that route. So recently, Brian Hoyti, a man that many Macedonians see responsible for what they call the coup in Skopje, is now appointed the ambassador. I want to remind you, Brian Hoyti was the man who recently came to Belgrade and said publicly that Serbia should not sit on two chairs but choose one, and that one should be the West, obviously. Two chairs was a metaphor for Russia and the West, which provoked a harsh reaction from both our diplomatic circles and from the society. And this was so obvious that even American ambassador had, and Hoyti himself had to apologize and to explain that he didn't mean exactly what he said. So this man is appointed as a new ambassador. New Macedonian government is, in my deepest opinion, working directly against the Macedonian interest, because the so-called Tirana, Albanian platform, is fully implemented, and at the same time, Sofia, the Bulgarian platform, is also. Recently, Macedonian government signed a treaty with Bulgaria about common history. Now the Macedonian church tries to get Cephalus autonomy by trying to ask the Bulgarian church to be the mother church of Macedonia, which would directly confront Serbian and the Bulgarian Orthodox Church. because the Macedonian part of the church is a part of the Serbian church. So this is obviously against Bulgarian interests and against everybody's interest in the region, but not against the interests of pro, I wouldn't even say United States, but pro-Atlanticist circles. And when we see these processes and then look at the map, there is something obvious. So the Chinese Silk Road goes from Greece upwards to the north, through Macedonia and Serbia. And then the destabilization line is actually cutting it. It goes from Podgorica, Montenegro, recently Serbian state, but under total occupation of pro-NATO, pro-Atlanticist structures, recently entered NATO, then through Macedonia and Bulgaria. So there is this horizontal line, and of course, Albania, Tirana and Albania in general. So that's Tirana and Pristina. So there is a horizontal line that is obviously led by somebody else's interest in trying to cut the Silk Road into half, which is why I think that Serbia is now going to recently got six MiG-29 fighter jets from Russia, and there are talks that Serbia will get four new S-300 counter-air-to-space rockets from Belarus and additional six planes from them. And the Chinese are also interested in strengthening Serbia's army. And it is not because trying to make Prussia on the Balkans, but because their economic interests are endangered if Serbia is not able to defend the routes, if Serbia is not able to physically defend the Silk Road.
Okay, Stefan, thanks a lot for telling us more about Serbia's significance to the One Belt, One Road project and the U.S. challenges to it, as well as everything that's taking place in Central and Eastern Europe nowadays, especially in the Balkans. As you remarked, these events are indeed game-changing. Thanks a lot for that. Now we're going to switch over and get a Polish perspective on things from Mr. Bartosz Bekier. Bartosz is a politologist and editor-in-chief of xportal.pl.
Trendstorm.
Hi, Bartosz. How are you?
Hi, great to hear from you again.
Okay, Bartosz, in spite of the competition between the U.S. and China all across the world, Poland has managed to secure the military and economic support of each great power, respectively. So how do you assess Warsaw's balancing act between Washington and Beijing in view of China's European Silk Road investments in the country?
Well, balancing between global superpowers is a very complicated game of interest. It can bring benefits for countries like Poland, but it can also be dangerous. It's obvious that Washington and Beijing are now competing for influence in Central Europe, but on the different levels. While Washington is securing strategic geopolitical pivots, we have an American infrastructure, military infrastructure, we have American army on our soil. China wants to expand its political influence through the economy. We already have information that during the 16+1 summit in Budapest, Beijing proposed that the China Development Bank would provide an equivalent amount of 2 billion euros, like 2.4 billion US dollars, as a development-oriented financial cooperation notes for the Interbank Association. And the first amount of money is not so important as creating a platform to transfer China's money to Central Europe. And what is really interesting about this deal is that Poland didn't join it. It's now official that negotiations between Polish and the Chinese government, which have lasted for a few years, just failed, and at least at this stage. Warsaw decided that Chinese offers of loans exchange for political influence of Beijing and the privileged position of Chinese companies in Poland is not what Poland wants, because the deal is not attractive. The government of Beata Szydło is known for foreign loans. For example, Minister Morawiecki rejected $10 billion of loan from the International Monetary Fund, explaining that the Polish economy is in so good condition that we don't need any loans. Well, in this case, in the case of Chinese propositions, it may be just a negotiation strategy to get better conditions from Beijing, but political veto from Washington could be also an option. So Poland signed only the strategic cooperation agreement between Polish Investment and Trade Agency and government of Hunan province. The fact is that now it's Hungary and Viktor Orban who are the main beneficiaries of a 16+1 cooperation.
Okay, I see. Well, you know, in what ways does China's new Silk Road vision help to advance Poland's Three Seas Initiative? And what would the consequences of an enhanced Sino-Polish strategic partnership be for the EU's post-Brexit geopolitical future?
Stronger Three Seas Initiative and China's economical presence in Central Europe means weaker bonds inside the EU. One of the consequences of the internal problems of Germany is that Poland is now a pacifier, even more passive than in the past. Europe is divided into blocks, but Three Seas Initiative is still only just a platform to fight for the particular interest of its member states. It's not an alternative for European integration, but it may become an alternative under specified conditions, such as further political discrepancies between so-called old and the new state inside the EU, green light from Washington, catastrophic consequences of Merkel's immigration policy, and strong will in Beijing to expand economically in Central Europe.
Okay, well, the last thing I want to ask you then, Bartosz, is given that Poland has the potential to serve as a vital east-west conduit of European and Chinese trade via Russia, on top of its already important role along the north-south axis via the Balkans, what are the odds that China could counteract American influence in encouraging Poland to normalize its relations with Russia out of the mutually beneficial Silk Road interest that both of them share?
True that if we imagine Three Seas Initiative as a sovereign player between superpowers, led, for example, by Poland and Hungary and strongly supported by China, the normalization of relations between Poland and Russia would be something rational. The problem is that Polish Eastern policy has nothing to do with rationalism and logics. The Hungarian factor can somewhat neutralize Polish Russophobia, this is how we have to call it, and this might be the case in the future, but only if you look at this case optimistically. First step towards change has been made now in Budapest because of the presence of Belarusian delegation. It means that Belarus may join 16+1 initiative in the future, and this, in my opinion, would change everything, so let's be optimistic.
Bartosz, thanks a lot for sharing your insightful thoughts with us today about Poland's Silk Road significance. It was very exciting to hear your geopolitical explanation about all this. Much appreciated.
Trendstorm.
Now, folks, if we reflect back on what both Stefan and Bartosz share with us today, we can see that Serbia and Poland are indeed the linchpins of this European Silk Road, though for different reasons. Each country has its own respective challenges. However, at the same time, they provide their own opportunity to China to bring multipolarity to Europe, though provided that they can remain intact in the sense of keeping their political ideas on course. There's a lot that the U.S. might be doing to try to offset them. The U.S. is trying to co-opt Serbia. It's also trying to misguide Poland. So let's keep our eyes in the Central Eastern European space because, as I remarked in the intro, it's not just Russia that's influential here. But believe it or not, it's China too. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.